Hey, there we go. I'm recording this time, I remember. So welcome to another episode of the Attack of the B-Movies podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Johnny.
And your co-host, James.
So James picked the movie, this movie this time. James picks a lot of them, and James usually makes a pretty good pick. This one I'm torn on. I really am. This one is the 1987 movie Miami Connection. Now, initially when you said Miami Connection, I mixed this up with Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Because there was like a whole group of movies in that.
Yeah.
So I mixed it up with that, which clearly it's not. The poster for this, or the DVD cover, whatever, the image you normally see, it is classic 80s. It's like watching, it's like looking at like Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Yeah.
It looks, I mean, it personifies what the 80s were. And I was drinking it, I was watching it, drinking a Three Floyds beer called like Dragon Snake or something, or Laser Snake, that had the same style. So I'm like, all right, I'm all set. So the movie was written by Wusang Park, who I don't think ever did anything else.
I wanted to say something. He played Uncle Song.
Yes, he did.
And he did this other movie, which I believe I have a copy of in one of those multi-pack sets. It's called L.A. Street Fighters, which I haven't watched that one yet, but I'll have to check it out. It seems, at least it'll be okay. I mean,
he looked like he was very talented.
Yeah.
And to be fair, most of the Taekwondo, because it was a Taekwondo movie, which this movie basically felt like an ad for Taekwondo.
I can see that.
It has a solid rating of 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb. It tanked when it came out, sadly. Taekwondo is one of those weird martial arts. And I say weird because it was created for a specific reason. Most martial arts were created for a specific reason to battle against somebody else's martial art, right? So like samurais or ninjas or Taekwondo, karate, all of them. They all had a way to counter and everything else. That's why, like, you'll see MMA fighters have more than one skill because you're fighting against, you don't know who you're fighting against, right? Like, initially, it was like, oh, this guy's a karate expert, this guy's that. And then it evolved. And it had to evolve because no one martial art is perfect, contrary to what everyone thinks about Brazilian jiu-jitsu, whatever. There's probably somebody out there that knows some traditional martial art that can kick that guy's ass, and vice versa.
Right.
So, but back in the 80s, everything was generally, you know, karate, taekwondo. I mean, there were a few other ones they used. Taekwondo is known for its kicks, and there's a lot of that in this movie. I'm just giving some background, and we'll talk about it. So apparently, Wusang Park saw YK Kim, who's the writer and star of the movie. Well, one of the two stars, really. On a Korean talk show talking about Taekwondo. And, oh my God, there's a picture of all of them together now, like in 2012. They all still kind of look about the same. Holy shit. Wow. He's got the same one. Wusang Park, who's credited in this as Richard Park or whatever. He called him and said, I want to make a movie. So they actually did base it off of just like him talking about Taekwondo. He's got a kick-ass convertible Impala in the movie. I like that. But it's a movie that's just so bizarre. Like, it's about ninjas running drugs. Ninjas. Legit ninjas with, like, outfits. Running drugs through the Florida Keys into Orlando and then Miami. In fact, I think they spend more time in Orlando than Miami in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, no, it starts in Miami. It starts in Orlando and ends there.
Because I think early on it's like somewhere in Florida, and then they do get into Orlando. And
yeah, I assume it's the Keys because they show the bridge going out there, or at least one of those islands. And that's where the initial drug deal's going down with like your typical 80s cartel-looking drug dealers and that. who get ambushed by ninjas. And then like the leader of the ninjas is wearing a bright white outfit, and people are just walking past him and don't even notice it at all. It's ridiculous. And that's how the movie opens. And then there's like one or two of the like cartel guys that seem to know martial arts, and they all have the typical 80s Uzi. No one has a pistol.
Right.
And they're just blind firing everywhere, right? And then it just goes off. Then it goes even more off the rails because you find out that the ninjas are a biker gang.
But then there's like another biker gang. Well, I guess that's the same.
Well, so So you find out they're a biker gang, and they when they're not, and it's funny because they ride away from the scene of the crime on their bikes with all their lights on at night, dressed as ninjas still.
Oh yeah.
Like no one is suspicious of this at all. Like if I'm driving out, you know, I probably wouldn't be suspicious, but I'd be like, wow, the world has come to an end. go ahead, James.
Yeah, they.
That, I mean, look, let's put it this way. This is the first movie I ever watched and took notes.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, I didn't write a lot down, but.
I will say a samurai sword or a katana cannot slice off an arm.
What I wanted to say about that encounter with the ninjas is that what we see, like, well, it's really the first scene where we see their kind of makeshift weaponry. So we see, like, metal rods, and one guy has these, like, I don't know what they are, but he uses them to like protect his upper arm.
Yeah, those are guys that lose.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that's when we.
Oh, when we see that they use that stuff in the movie.
Yeah, it's like the kind of beginning of that, which I thought was kind of cool. I mean, they don't.
Yeah, they at least put up a fight. They weren't like, okay, let's just lose.
Right, right. And then their master is basically disappointed because the ninjas forget the money.
He got the coke. That
stuff happens, right? I think it's the white ninja, as you were saying.
Yeah.
And then we learn about this. There's this band. We see this band playing, which is like, this is their first song, right? They're speaking about striking with no mercy into the night, and they're talking about escaping from Miami. I wrote down some of the lyrics.
It was the most horrible lip syncing I've ever seen. And it's so bizarre because they're all playing instruments, but none of the instruments have a cable going to it. They've clearly filmed it somewhere with a stage. This is before, even if you had a wireless transmitter for your instrument, it still plugs into the instrument.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that makes sense.
I'm like looking, I'm like, huh. So, I mean, I don't expect the actors to know how to play the instruments. I get it. But, and there's a couple of them put on a good act, you know. The guy that played John, Vincent Hirsch, who had to be like 8 foot tall. Mm-hmm. He looked like he was getting into it. And the guitar player who looked like he would have fit in like the Marshall Tucker band was doing all right too. I think his name's Angelo Giannotti. He was looking like he was having fun out there.
Yeah, I think he did too, yeah.
But yeah, I'm like, that guy doesn't blend in at all with this group. And then there's a girl on stage.
Yeah, that is Jane. I think she's the main female character.
This clearly was written by somebody not from here because it has every stereotypical American name. Mark, John, Jack, Jim, Tom, Jane, Jeff. And then Yoshino.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she doesn't like that her brother is the – Jeff is the leader of the gang.
He's the leader of the other biker gang we find out.
Yeah.
Which is like a Harley gang.
So they come up. She doesn't like her brother because I think that's at the point when
– Well, he walks in and sees her on the stage.
Yeah.
With the head of the other – with the ninja biker gang. Oh, my God. Did I just say ninja biker gang? How was this never on Mystery Science Theater? I know Riff Trax did it.
Yeah, I think they were.
But you know what? Because it was on a print.
Yeah.
It aired. It went to the theater. It was out in 3 weeks. No one. It was horribly reviewed. And somebody bought it just on a whim on eBay from Draft House. And that's how they ended up revitalizing it, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about more at the end because it's actually a really neat story.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he sees her there and the other guy's like, isn't that your sister? Which later on, what that guy says makes him calling her the other guy's sister kind of goofy. And then we find out that John and Jane are in college together, right?
Yeah.
And see, they all go to college, apparently, even though their age ranges look to be about 27 to 40. Like, not one of them is the age of a college. Like, she's supposed to be playing, like, a college kid that her brother needs to keep an eye on. And there's many scenes where I'm like, you're, like, 35. And it's not her fault. I mean, she was hired for a job. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. So, basically, you know, John is telling Jane to, you know, okay, let's hang out.
I take that back. She would have been, like, in real life, she would have been, like, 27.
Yeah.
Who knew? Wow, I just looked her up. So, go ahead, sir.
So, yeah, John is he shows up to her class because the teacher's going around looking at their programming project or whatever.
Yeah.
Something like that.
10 print quote name quote 20 yes. Go to 10 run.
So we have John in telling her, you know, let's go. They want to go, you know, he wants to go with her, you know, walk around campus. I don't remember.
And he seems like a good, he seems like he's a good student. And so does she. Like, none of them seem like dropout losers. I'm giving that.
Right. So that happens. And then Jeff shows up. He doesn't like the fact that Jane is involved with John. So then he punches John.
Which is funny because he, like, my boss tells a story about when he was on the rugby team at wherever he went, because I don't want to go off too much. He got, you know, his buddies got in a fight at a bar, and this guy was so tall he had to jump to hit him. I'm 5'11". I work with guys that are 6'6", 6'7". I could hit them without jumping, okay? Now, I don't know how tall Jeff is in this movie, and I don't know how tall John is, but John literally looks like he's like 6'9", 6'8".
Yeah.
And Jeff looks all about 5'8". He legitimately looked like he had to leave his feet a little bit to punch him in the jaw.
And, pretty much, yeah.
And the gang he's with at this point, they're driving like that classic porno, like 80s porno Mercedes, only it's in red instead of white or silver. And like one guy's all dressed in fatigues. One guy's like got blue blockers on and a leather jacket with like a neck scarf that's camouflaged. Another guy's wearing like a midriff showing Notre Dame shirt. I'm like, who the really?
I think one guy was wearing a noose, or was that later?
Yeah,
on?
Oh, maybe it's a noose. It could be. It could have been a noose.
Okay.
But I'm just looking, and then there's like this. Then there's like a fat guy that looks like Walter from like The Big Lebowski 20 years earlier. It's just like this motley crew. It almost looks. It's almost like they were like, "Hey, you guys just got done filming." What's that movie? Escape from New York. It's like a bad B movie rip off of it. Well, any of those post-apocalyptic movies, and they're like, "Hey, why don't you come here?"
Oh yeah.
And John's trying to be nice. He goes to shake the guy's hand. He's like, "Oh, hi, I'm John," and he just punches him.
Because I guess Jeff was just really angry, and it felt like he had to take it out on John. So.
Well, he's got to protect his sister because she needs to do good in college.
Yeah.
And then it's like anticlimactic because I thought part of the plot was going to be that John stood up and just beat his ass in front of his gang.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't happen.
Oh, well.
Instead, they all just hop in the convertible white Impala, which apparently has doors that don't open.
Yeah, because I don't think they ever open a door.
No, but there's one scene where John, the guy that plays John, Vincent Hirsch, jumps in like no problem. And YK Kim goes to jump in, he gets the one leg in, and the other slides off, and he has to, like, kick it up again. Like, you guys might have wanted to fuck that out a bit. So they drive off, and they're like, he's like, yeah, I would have kicked his ass if she wasn't there. I'm like, I would have liked to have seen that, because you're, like, 7 foot, so you have a hell of a reach advantage.
I would have as well, yeah. But basically, yeah, and then I think after that, Jeff...
Now it kind of becomes a blur.
Yeah, because
No. After that, they show the nightclub where the band plays. Now, they're in a band, and they call it Steel Dragon. No, it's a metal band. What is it called? Dragon Sound.
Yeah, Dragon Sound, yeah.
And they play inspirational music, which the young kids love, apparently, because we find this out in this scene when the old band goes to get their job back and threatens the owner of the club. An actor named William P. Young, who I swear I've seen him before. Oh, no, that's all he's known for. clearly not. So apparently everyone knows martial arts in this because they threaten him, the lead singer or the lead guy of the other band, three other guys, and he kicks their ass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hilarious watching it because he's wearing like a typical Miami Vice like looking suit. And but during the argument, he's like, their music's what the kids want to hear. I'm like, yeah, kids want to hear songs about friendship and getting crime out of Miami. I'm like, wait a minute. In 1987, I'm like, I'm pretty sure metal and punk were still somewhat popular.
Yeah.
Grunge was coming up. I don't know. It was just funny. It's just like, because they're a band and they get involved in fighting crime, it's like Buckaroo Banzai banged like American Ninja. And had a movie.
Yeah, and a little bit of Streets of Fire.
Yeah. Good call, yeah. You know? Yeah. All right, go ahead.
So that is saying that the confrontation with the guy who runs the venue, right?
Who actually is in the movie for probably combined a good 15 minutes, and he has no name.
So yeah, their song is about, I think they sing about
Taekwondo. Song she sings is about friends forever.
Yeah, and Taekwondo is to stop senseless killing or something like that.
Yeah, it's literally a song that's a commercial for Taekwondo and being friends.
Yeah. So then we find out later from Jack that he doesn't want to play at the club anymore because of what's happening. And it feels like things have gone too far. But then Mark is telling him, you know, we should still keep playing there.
Which guy was Jack?
Jack, I'm trying to remember.
He was only in a few scenes.
Yeah.
Like, the band had like five guys, but every fight scene there were three. Maybe four.
Yeah.
I'm like, where's number five? Is he waiting to get tapped in or tagged in?
No, I think...
Because it was Tom, Jim, Jack, John, Mark. That was the band.
Yeah.
Oh, and Jane, really, but she didn't do any fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hoping she would. I was kind of hoping to see, like, Jane do a little ass kicking, but I guess not. So, yeah, Mark's thinking about not... Was it Mark that was thinking about not doing it anymore?
It was Jack. He doesn't want to play at the club.
Yeah, because he doesn't want any trouble.
Yeah, that's what he says. And then I was saying, Mark's saying, well, we should keep doing it, you know.
Well, because Mark's like, it's not our fault that the other guys aren't there. You know, their agent got him the job is what he basically said.
Mm-hmm.
So they play at the club again. They leave the club, and they get – now it's like a post-apocalyptic film. They're on the streets of some city in Florida, which we're assuming is Miami. They turn the corner and they get surrounded. There's like five cars in front of them. What looks like, I couldn't even describe. It's like when you hear the stories where it's like my Florida man, it's like every one of them is there waiting to fight them. And then behind them pulls up the other band.
When they're in there, I think I know what you're talking about. When they're in the, like the gang, they have like baseball bats.
Yeah. It's like the first big fight scene, and then the other band pulls up like next to him.
Oh yeah.
And you're like, really? You hired like this? And he's like, I'm gonna kill you. Like, dude, it's just a shitty nightclub.
Yeah, and the one of them is telling, you know, Mark and his friends that they should leave. They should
leave town. Not just stop playing. Not just stop having the band. Leave town.
It's like, well, I don't really, I mean, yeah, I guess they're kind of thinking like the gang is thinking, well, this is our turf, but at the same time, I don't know. I didn't really take them all that seriously.
Neither did Mark.
Either. So. Yeah.
And then it's hilarious because they all jump out of the car and they all run, but they kick some ass. But
yeah.
the original band who just had their ass kicked gets their ass kicked again by Mark.
Pretty much, yeah.
So like throughout the movie, they're all bandaged up in every scene they're in. Which I thought was pretty funny. I'm like, okay, I like that. That was good. And honestly, most of the fight scenes, the people fighting, the main character guys like Kim and Hirsch and Diamond Smith, Gennady, they all seem to have a good amount of, or at least varying level of skill from average to like good, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Yeah.
I think the fight choreography could have used a little work because like, if you're fighting four guys and you take 3 seconds to throw a guy, But okay, I mean, it's a low-budget film. So I think the fight choreography was pretty good. Oddly, later on in the movie, when Uncle Song fights that group of guys, that one seems like a much better, like, quick fight. And he seems that it looks like he has a ton of skill, like you know, the guy that plays him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looks very natural. And they're just kicking the crap out. They basically kicked the crap out of him. And the next – here's the problem, like, too, I think, is the editing of this movie – it's like you see him running, you see him beating some guys up, and then all of a sudden, cut, and they're in the car driving away again.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, And no cop showed up. Keep in mind, no cop showed up to this either. In the middle of the night, 10 carloads of people. So, yeah, it wasn't a bad scene, but yeah, one guy had like a chain or the baseball. It was all the makeshift weapons like you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
What was the next thing then?
Well, I remember.
Oh, they're at the house. Because they all live together. We find that out.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark thinks they're all orphans, and that's why they got together. Like I said, this movie is like every 80s like trope. Oh, we're all orphans. Let's get together. And
find out that Jim isn't an orphan. He's just sad because of what happened with his dad.
Well, I mean, ultimately, he's kind of an orphan because his dad left and he never had contact with him.
That's true. Yeah.
And then the mom died, I think. But Jim's been trying to find a dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is funny when Mark's like, oh, I thought we were all orphans. I'm like, does it really matter? And the one dude, Tom, that was played by Angelo Giannotti, that bushy-ass mustache and that mullet, I kept looking at him thinking of the Mystery Science Theater episode with Space Mutiny, where he's like, oh, yeah, woke up the Oak Ridge boys, because like half the people in that scene had that hair.
I was thinking of Kevin Eastman, the Ninja Turtles, the guy who co-created them. Back when he was in the 80s, he kind of had that look, too. I've seen pictures of him, so.
So he's either in a 70s folk country band or he was an 80s porn star. We're not sure which. Okay, so we had that. They're in the house. We find out Jim is not an orphan.
Mm-hmm.
And where do we go from there? Because I just watched it, and I honestly, let me look at my notes. If you remember, go ahead.
Sure, okay. I can read what I wrote here.
It's funny, when her brother shows up at the school, it's him and like five other carloads of guys that all look like they, like I said, came out of a post-apocalyptic movie. And I wrote down Caravan of Idiots. And there's one dude wearing like blue blockers, or in one of the scenes, one of the guys fighting. Oh, it was in the nightclub. The guy was wearing like a bright white Coca-Cola sweater and like blue blockers. It was so like, the acting is not good. Let's be honest.
No.
And when Jim is telling his story, like, he's crying, there's tears, but the emotion just seems not there.
Yeah, now that I think about it, it's like the acting didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, he's telling a story about his parents, and he's like, well, near the cinematography. He's like, well, my mom was Korean, and my dad was a Black American. I'm like, he said it with so little emotion that you're like, I don't buy it.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think any of the of these, you know, of these well, any of the actors are for like
actors.
I don't think they're actually actors. So
I think some of them were in one or two things here and there.
Oh, okay.
And I think William Urgel, who played Jeff, actually had like an acting career. No, there was somebody I looked up that did more than just this.
Okay.
I think Woosung Park actually directed or produced a ton of movies.
Yeah, as I mentioned, that L.A. Survivors, I probably should watch it.
Yeah, he from 72 to like 2005, he had directed 22 films. So, I mean, he's, you know.
Yeah, and they're mostly
American Chinatown, Game Justice.
And they all have to do, I would say, with some form of Taekwondo or Kung Fu or martial arts, whatever.
Yeah. That's funny, Chinatown too. That's not the follow-up to Chinatown, right? No.
I don't know.
No, there was a follow-up to Chinatown. It's got a different title though. Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we find out they're all orphans. That's what brought them together. And then you're gonna have to pick up because I honestly kind of don't remember. I think we see the motorcycle ninjas again in their dojo.
And we see the motorcycle gang just hanging out, indulging.
Jeff's gang, which is like your classic American biker gang.
They go to the, you know, they hang out. They're like, oh, I don't want to talk business. One of them says, I don't want to talk business. Just have fun. Right? Yes. I think he has Jeff. There's this one guy with the glasses. I don't remember his name, but he's part of the gang.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I don't want to talk about business. I just want to have fun. So those ladies, you know, they go to the bar. I think that's probably when we see the topless chick.
Well, the white ninja meets them there because the white ninja and Jeff know each other. Is that who you're talking about? Only he's not wearing the white ninja outfit, clearly. He's the leader of the biker ninjas. And he comes up and he's like, yeah, let's just have fun. He goes in there and he kisses the bartender chick. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Because I think I didn't really like connect who he was because I had seen... Because in the movie, he's wearing his ninja's outfit more than he's wearing his street clothes. So it's like... Yeah. But yeah, the guy with the glasses, you know?
Oh, Woosung Park died in 2006. He's 63 years old only. That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, that we see there what they do in the bar, and then we get to a point where Morgan and Sven's like, I believe they all go out for pizza because they're hungry, and Tom is going to park the car.
No, you're jumping ahead.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they first Jeff's at the gym he owns with all the hillbilly martial artists, and the band guy's walking again. And they want to hire him, and they say, if you get him out of the way, he goes, I want my job back. If you get them out of the way, anything I make is yours. Then why are you working? Because you're not getting paid. Because they walk in all bloodied and bandaged again. Mm-hmm. And then they meet our fearless heroes in a train yard. And they get ambushed in the train yard, and they kick everyone's ass and fight their way out. And then the cops show up, and they're gone already. And the cops are like, where'd everybody go? I don't know, but it looks like another gang. We should really get the gangs out of this town. And they get in the cars and drive off.
Yeah, the cops don't really do much in the movie either.
They get out of their car with their guns out, and there's no one around them. So that scene was before the one you're talking about. The one you're talking about is more near the end. I don't remember what else happens.
Where Tom gets kidnapped?
Yeah. It's about, because the movie's only an hour and a half.
Because I thought that's when
it's he like a, that. It's about, I want to say it's about at the 50 to 60. Yeah, it might be right after this. Because he's unhappy that his, about what happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right. Jeff might have kidnapped. It might be right near this, the train scene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they kidnapped Tom. Which I don't know how he didn't hear them coming. It's not like they were stealthy.
Well, what's weird is that he didn't even bother, because he's driving the convertible. He didn't even bother to put up the roof. And it was like raining.
You can't, because that's how they all get in the car. Remember, they open the doors.
Oh, true.
If you open the doors, how are they going to get in? Or if they put the roof on, how is he going to get in?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess it was running that hard anyway. I mean,
it doesn't matter. I would have done it. I find it funny that all you found wrong with that scene was he didn't put up the roof. Not that he lightly got hit with a car door and didn't even throw one punch as they were kidnapping him.
Yeah, I mean, I do think he could have defended himself too. I mean, because he,
they all seem to be Taekwondo black belts, according to what the other band said.
Huh.
So yeah, I was kind of surprised at that. I'm like, really? Not even gonna throw a punch? Huh? Okay. And he's the one they were calling Pretty Boy when they captured him too. I'm like, really him? I'm not sure anybody in that band's pretty. Yeah, and then what is it? They get a letter saying he got kidnapped. Is that right? I did have to fast forward through some of the driving scenes to make sure I got done before we recorded, so I might have missed a little dialogue. But I'm pretty sure they get a. I'm pretty sure they pretty much get a ransom letter.
Yeah, something like that.
They meet us wherever, and just whatever.
Because they go and then they fight.
They fight Jeff's guys.
Yeah, but okay, because you. Trying to think, what was it, like an industrial park where they're
fighting? Yeah, they had them like two stories up on something, chained up, and they were force feeding them beer.
That's what I thought you meant. And then train yard was like, oh yeah, I didn't really.
No, there was actually like a freight yard scene first.
Okay.
And then then there was the industrial scene.
That makes more sense. And I probably wasn't as into the train yard freight yard scene, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it was something watching John run through the train yard, because he's a big dude. I'm like, how is anyone even coming near him with that stride? And he was moving pretty fast. But yeah, so then they end up confronting Jeff and the crony, the hillbilly ninjas again.
Mm-hmm. More makeshift weapons. And then one guy, he gets hit in the neck with a metal rod.
Yeah, that guy might be dead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, that's like one of the few gory bits, which
there's some gory bits early on.
True.
With the ninja guys. Because they cut that guy's arm off at the shoulder. I'm like, yeah, I've seen a lot of evidence that says a katana, no matter how strong you are, is not going to cut through bone. But all right, it's a movie. We'll go with it. Remember, yeah, so that was one of the gorier bits, yeah.
And then Jeff eventually does fall to his death.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of like really anticlimactic. Because they're all like, it's Jeff, John, and Mark up there. Mm-hmm. And before that, Mark and Jeff are fighting it out. And Jeff's got these two like metal rods with spikes all over them. And I don't remember what Mark had. I think Mark had just the wooden sword.
Yeah,
it's a wooden. Those are. My daughter did Taekwondo for a while, and I remember watching other people practice them. I can't remember what they're called, but they don't have an edge on them.
Oh, I see.
Because Mark clearly wasn't out to kill anybody yet. Right. So he disarmed Jeff, and Jeff ran and up the thing, and yeah, they're kind of all just like making each other flinch, and Jeff falls to his death, which I'm like, really? Like, you couldn't have had a little face-off. I mean, really, it should have been John facing off against him, because that's like his nemesis, right?
I mean, he could have hit the ground harder, too, because he doesn't hit it that hard.
And he's only two stories up.
Yeah.
And he died, like, instantly. Like, not even, like, landing on a spike or something. Just boom.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of people fall two stories, and they're like, my leg's broken, but I'm okay.
Right.
So it was really an anticlimactic fight scene at that point. Because you're like, yeah, you know, I like I said, I think John should have been the guy that faced off against them because of the punch earlier, you know?
Mm-hmm. That would have made more sense.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed with that. I mean, I think they were trying to feature YK Kim, you know, because it was he was kind of the star of the movie and their leader, but still. And then they go back to the apartment?
Yeah, and they're – because they want to – you know, the ninjas are sent to avenge – Jeff's death.
Yeah, that's the next scene. So that's the scene I was talking about. So we see, I don't remember what comes first, if they're at the apartment and they find out that Jim's dad's alive and wants to see him. Or, no, it can't be. The first scene, so we see two guys go into the motorcycle ninja gang. Is that what we're calling them? Sure.
Yeah, that's
the motorcycle ninja gang. I'm not going to lie. This makes like... This makes Master Ninja 1 and 2 or American Ninja look like Saving Private Ryan. So we see them and the guy goes, your brother was murdered by dragon whatever. And I'm like, brother? I'm like, well, that's odd because earlier, if they're brothers, earlier, unless he was just talking because they're both in biker gangs, mm-hmm. but earlier he goes, oh, is that your sister up there? Well, wouldn't that have been your sister too, dipshit? So I was kind of confused by that a little bit. Like, unless it's like a bond, like family, generally, like one gang member is not going to go to avenge the death of another gang member.
Right.
Like, I don't see that. There's no love loss in the Yakuza. And I'm pretty sure they were supposed to be like a Japanese smuggling bit. Like, of all the crime syndicates, I'm sure there's one in Korea, but I've never heard of like a Korean crime syndicate smuggling coke through like Florida.
I haven't either.
So, yeah, Japanese crime syndicate, yeah, I've heard, yeah. So that was a bit strange to me. So then they set out to avenge them, and it's a nice sunny day, and it's all good news for Jim, and they're all dressed nice, and they get in the car, and they're going to drive to the airport because Jim's going to fly to see his dad. Mm-hmm. And they're going across a wooden bridge. I don't know where the hell they're driving or why they're on a one-lane wooden bridge. I've been to Orlando, and I've been to the airport, whatever. And they get ambushed by the... Don't you find it funny how all these gangs knew exactly where they were going?
Yeah.
Like, just thinking about that. Like, somehow the ninja motorcycle gang's like, ha, we've caught you. Like,
okay, we have MapQuest. We can just pinpoint, okay, they're going this way, but they didn't really have it.
So the lead guy's got a book out, and he's looking at the map. Maybe they're coming this way. So they get ambushed, and they jump out and start fighting immediately. Like, you ever think about the fact that they have, like, a 4,000-pound car with a V8 engine? Throw it in reverse, run over a few guys?
Yeah, they should have done that.
Like, there was never one time where they're like, all right, let's throw this baby in gear and go. They're like, put it in park, let's jump and run. What? So now this scene's actually not bad. This is probably the better fight scene in the movie. And it's pretty long.
And it has a few gory bits in it.
Yeah.
There's
slow-mo
in it, which I like. There's not too much slow-mo, but, you know, you get a couple towards the end of it, there's some slow-mo that you have.
Well, they're running through streams and forest and mm-hmm. fighting at the same time, and Jim gets sliced across the stomach mm-hmm. and chest. So he's dying, and that sets Mark and John off. Now, I swear to God, that either Jack – no, I swear to God Jack was in that car when they pulled up there. I swear that car had four people in it. And I say that because the scene after this that we'll get to in a minute, Jack's in that scene.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the four of them, and I don't remember. I don't think Jane was there, but there was the four.
No, and Tom wasn't there because I would never forget that mullet. So if he's there, he just took off and didn't do shit. I don't know what he was doing. But they're fighting. Jim gets injured. And then John and Mark just go on a spree. And at one point, John gets sliced across the back. But I guess it wasn't deep enough to really do anything. They start killing these guys. They're killing the ninjas at this point now with their own weapons. And John, like, gets pissed. He's got sliced. He kills the guy. And then he, like, takes off his shirt and jacket. I'm like, now you're doing it? Like, you're two-thirds of the way done with everybody. All right. And they slaughter the whole group of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fighting in the water. That was a cool scene, too. Mark's underwater, and the two guys approach, and he just comes up and slices the one guy.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of gore in this scene, like you're saying. And then the master ninja, or leader, or whatever, in bright white appears.
Probably it's more appropriate to wear white during the day than it is at night. If you're
Well, not if it's after Labor Day. Definitely, you know, it's definitely not like if you're trying to blend in.
Right, right.
So who's it that faces off with him?
Wasn't it Mark?
It's Mark, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a good fight scene. That guy had like four different weapons he tried using too.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had the sword, he had the little knives, he had the smaller knives. And that scene's pretty long too. That's got to be what, 3-4 minutes, it seems?
Yeah, it was. I remember it being like having. It wasn't just a quick fight. Yeah, it lasted a few minutes.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty solid. It wasn't the bad fight scene at all. It seems like when they were doing like scenes where it was like one or two, maybe three people, they were fine. Mm-hmm. But once they got to where it was like big groups, it was off.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the funny thing is, I just looked at the movie poster that they had for it, the theatrical release poster. It says greetings and it says Miami on it. It looks like, I want to say Grand Theft Auto Vice City's thing. I think it was that game. But so Mark thinks he's taking care of the guy, starts walking away. And in traditional movie trope form, what happens?
They win.
Before that. Yeah, we know they're going to win. No, remember Mark takes the guy out and then the guy gets back up when he's walking away? He's going to stab him.
That's
what I said, in typical movie trope.
Oh.
And that's when Mark finishes him off with his own blade.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't too gory, but there was some blood there.
Yeah.
Now, was that when they showed Mark and John in slow motion screaming, running through the jungles or running through the forest? That made for such a strange scene because I thought the movie ended like that.
Oh.
I'm like, why would you end it like this? And all of a sudden they're in the car again, driving with driving Jim to the hospital. So Jim was still alive. They get him to the hospital. That's where he meets his dad. And suddenly Jack reappears.
Mm-hmm.
Where did John get the new shirt? The new shirts.
Yeah, I didn't really
suddenly he's wearing like a Hawaiian shirt and like a t-shirt under it. I'm like, where did you get new clothes? And why are there no cops questioning you people? You'd think cops would show up and be like, huh, there's 15 bikes here and a bunch of dead bodies. Should we investigate this? Meh. Should we call the hospitals and see if anybody came in injured? Meh. And that's pretty much how it ends, right? It ends at the hospital?
Pretty much, yeah, because Jim's dad is there and
he tells him what great friends Jim has for saving his life. Yeah, yeah. The bands would got him in the mess in the first place, though, too. because Jack's there, because Jack's pushing him out on the wheelchair. And then I remember, I think it was Jim says the line, no one will mess with our band now. And I'm like, really? Come on. And that's how it ends. And, you know, I watched this, and I said, this might be the worst movie ever. I might have to retire from doing my show. And I told my wife, I'm like, James is going to get it for this one. But now we're talking about it, and now there's a fondness about it. where now it's like, it was really bad, but it was enjoyable in a way.
Yeah, I think so too.
It wasn't like some of the ones we do could have been better with better writing, could have been better with better direction, could have been better with better budget, better acting, things like that. I don't think you could have made this better, to be honest.
Right. I don't think so either.
I mean, it was never, it was just, the plot was very convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
Because they never really show the ninja smuggling. Like, he was more concerned with the money than the drugs. So it's not like they were actually smuggling the drugs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, but then he brought the coke to the club. So it's like, well, he clearly is interested in it. Oh, there was one gory part we missed. The last of the white ninja guy, the last of the ninja motorcycle biker gang guys. Did I say that right? Whatever. The last of them shows up and tells the boss that everyone's dead, and the boss cuts off his head.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
That wasn't bad. That was bad and not bad at the same time. And the blood's pumping out of it.
Yeah.
So that was bad and not bad all at the same time. I kind of liked it. It's tough because it is legitimately bad. But I've seen people call it the best bad movie ever. And I'm like, I can totally understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you actually did start to like the characters, even though there was like no development at all. And the plot was a little convoluted, but I don't know. It was enjoyable. So I got to say I liked it, kind of. Can we say that? I don't even know. Does that make sense?
I think so. I mean, yeah. I do too, but it's like, you know, I think.
Like, I'm not going out to buy a 4K version of this.
Oh, well, I have the Blu-ray, but it was on sale, so it's not like I, you know, spend a large chunk of change on it. I mean.
Well, I watched it on Tubi.
Okay, well, that works too.
So, we both like it in a weird, torturous way. Like, if this was on MST3K, this should have been the last one that broke that broke Mike in the box. Like, they hated, was it Space Mutiny? What was the one they said they hated the most? I think it was that one.
Okay.
And I'm watching this going, if they thought that was bad, I don't know, man. I mean, this was something else. So, I kind of enjoyed it. The music was very Gem and the Holograms sounding and positive messages throughout. Until this movie, I'd never heard of Drafthouse Films.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not that familiar with them either. They've put out quite a few.
Oh, sure. Now your volume gets nice and loud. Oh, now you're quiet. I've never heard of Manson International. So now let's talk about the film a little bit. So,
sure.
So it was poor box office upon release, right? We know the plot. We know the cast. So production, I told you how they met. He was promoting a book about Taekwondo, and Park met Kim and convinced him to make the film. He conceptualized the story while watching Kim's interview. And eventually it was going to be one of two brothers. It was going to be YK Kim and a guy named Bobby Kim. And the working title was Taekwondo. Okay. Mm-hmm. He borrowed from friends, took out loans, spent his savings, mortgaged his Taekwondo school to finance the film. Never made a film before. And Aaron Sullivan of the Orlando Weekly was quoted as saying he had no idea what he was doing, clearly. He was trying to find distributors and all that stuff, but he kept getting rejected, right? And he even went to MGM and all the big ones. And they're like, dude, don't even.
Wow.
And he got rejected by everybody. But he was even told, don't waste your time, just throw it away. It's trash. And he's like, I was in too deep. I had spent the money. I did it, you know? So, the film was purchased for $100,000 and everyone was pretty happy with it. They thought it was going to be great. Kim's thought it was, he was quoted as saying that, I was so excited and I had no doubt that we would pack every theater and would be a blockbuster. His plan is a movie that draws attention to exciting martial arts action, not computer generated. Those are two different quotes from two different times, but still. Yeah. The run ended in 3 weeks. The film cost $1 million. It almost bankrupted him. So you feel bad for him. It was never on Mystery Science Theater. So then it went, and then no one heard about it for a long time.
Yeah, and then the Draft House did come around because...
Well, Draft House found it in a strange way. So in 2009, one of their programmers, because Draft House is in Austin, Texas, the guy's name was Zach Carlson, found the film on eBay. And he's, for the hell of it, he's like, I'm going to put $50 in. So he wins it, right? He screens the film at a theater in Austin. And people were like, yeah, this is good. Right? Because now these kind of movies, like, because we, like, people like us, we do the show, people listen, they watch it. Now there's an appreciation the last 20 years or so for these type of movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Quentin Tarantino, you know, did his, like, grindhouse movies. And, you know, lots of people have kind of, like, helped bring these this genre higher up. So it got, he wanted to re-release the film. Draft House wanted to re-release it. They kept calling Kim. He kept hanging up. He believed that the requests were jokes. He said, I was wondering why they wanted to distribute this movie that the public had rejected and Hollywood treated like trash 25 years ago. So eventually they get they talked to him and they got a deal with him. And in the summer, I want to say it says in the summer of 2010, it was screened as part of the Alamo Draft House Weird Wednesday. And it was reported by Rob Homanek, Slant Magazine, that the response was immense, almost transcendent, leading to encore presentations and ultimately a limited re-release. It then screened in New York at the New York Asian Film Festival, which when you think about it, it was kind of revolutionary. It's a movie made by an Asian guy, starring an Asian, you know, written by them.
Yeah.
You know, in the late 80s, right? The Everything Is Festival, it received positive receptions. Erin Sullivan of the Orlando Weekly, again, this time she said Draft House helped connect this film to its audience with a series of midnight showings at film festivals and theaters in New York, Miami, Atlanta, Seattle, and this week Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
So it became, it went from being a dud to getting favorable post-2009 reviews. It has a 68% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic a 56 out of 100. The most are mixed or average reviews. It's been well received because now people understand. Now people look at movies and go, hey, you know what? Let's judge it for what it is. Not what, you know, let's not judge it against something else. You know, because that's what people have been starting doing now. Like, that's why movies like in this B movie category and C movie category now seem to be these cult classics, right?
Right, right.
Rob Homanek of Slant Magazine, who I mentioned before, gave the film 3.5 stars out of 4. He wrote that love it or hate it, it's doubtful you'll ever forget it, and may just force you to redefine your definition of what constitutes quote unquote good cinema. Rich Jizwayak of Gawker wrote that the film was so bad it's essential. David Schmader of The Stranger wrote that to say that Miami Connection is bad is a crushing understatement. Miami Connection is so bad it makes Tommy Wiseau's The Room look like wild strawberries. But out of this tragic mess of failure and incompetence, a distinctly sweet spirit emerges. Its source is the cumulative gameness and good sportsmanship of everyone involved in Miami Connection, which is drenched in a goofy joy that's contagious. And I think that's exactly what it is. Because it has a very positive feel and message from the people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's the weird thing. And I think that's why I enjoyed it, because I just felt for the people that made it, because they did something and they did it and they were happy about it. You know, it was, I think he hit it on the head exactly what it was. Jackie Allen of Tucson Weekly said Miami Connection is quite possibly the most hilariously terrible film made in the 80s, which is no small feat. The film has gained a cult following over the years and with good reason. It's one of the best bad movies ever made.
Yeah.
And I agree with her too, or I think it's she. There's no pictures, so I don't know. But I agree with her, too. And it was featured in 2015 at a Riff Track event. YK Kim spoke with somebody from Paste. I don't know what Paste is. Maybe it's a magazine. He appreciated that the Riff Track event brought the film to the screens again. And even if they were making fun of it, he even planned to watch the event himself. It's just hilarious. In 2014, in Pharrell Williams' song Happy, the first dancer is seen sporting a Dragon Sound cutoff tee in the music video. It was on the podcast, How Did This Get Made? Of course it is. Let's see. One of the big things that I thought was cool was in the game Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, which is kind of inspired by like the color scheme and all that, is that 80s feel.
Okay.
It uses the song Friends during its end credit, and the cover art seems to be very Miami Connection-ish also.
Oh, okay.
So this movie had like this profound influence through the years that no one ever thought it would.
Yeah.
There was also a making of that they did that it's, I think, the entire cast was part of.
Oh,
whoever was still around. Let's see. Here, Friends for Eternity. It came out in 2012. Friends for Eternity, the making of Miami Connection.
Huh.
The cast of Miami Connection looked back on the cult film 25 years later. Joseph Diamond, Vincent Hirsch, Angelo Giannotti, YK Kim, Maurice Smith. They're all in it. And there's a picture you can find on the internet that it shows them all wearing the where'd the picture go? They were all wearing the shirts. They're wearing red shirts that say the band name on them. And they're all like in the stands. It's really, I mean, sadly, you know, the director died in 2000 and what I say, 14 or so, I think I said. But he lived just long enough to see his film somewhat become a success, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think it's a happy, good feeling story,
mm-hmm.
you know, how it worked out.
I think so too, yeah.
So, and I think all that, I think that's what its appeal is exactly what they said, that it was just so, it was just corny enough to work. But like the songs, like the one song is like Friends Forever.
And then what about like Against the Ninja or something? Is one of the other ones?
Yeah, there's like three songs and that's one of them too. and the woman that sang, you know, she actually sang the song because she's credited in the game Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, her and her now ex-husband. So apparently Kathy Collier, or Collier, however you want to say it, married Angelo Giannotti for a while.
Huh.
Yeah. Who knew? Huh. Yeah. Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon soundtrack. Yeah, so I was dead set on just giving you crap about this one. And then now I think about it, I'm like, yeah, you know, it just has that, it oozes with that 80s, like, low-budget charm, right? Like,
Give it a look. You know, I'm sure you'll get a kick out of it, and you'll enjoy the you know, the over-the-top violence. But you also enjoy the enjoy. I use the word loosely, but you'll be into the music, and you'll wonder why you'll want to learn how to look good in a suit while fighting ninjas. You'll learn how to do that in this movie. So.
And we'll close out with that. I couldn't put it any better myself, James. So I'm Johnny. Thanks for listening. And
I'm James.